Support for this program is provided by Chevron.
The Colorado River is this workhorse waterway that supplies a huge swath of the West and the Southwest. It runs from the mountains of Wyoming down through Arizona, over the border into northern Mexico. It supplies 40 million people, farms, ranches, cities all along the way. But its flows have been dwindling in recent years, due both to overuse by all the people along the way and to shrinking precipitation, shrinking flows, thanks to drought and climate change. And this all finally came to a head on Monday when the federal government, through the Bureau of Reclamation, made the first ever shortage declaration, which results in mandatory cuts in water deliveries to Arizona and Nevada, who are junior users on the system.
I'm Kelsey Tamburino, and this is Politico Energy. Today, Politico's Annie Snyder on the historic water cut on the Colorado River. It's Tuesday, August 17th.
This is a dramatic step. It's going to go into effect next year in January. But it's not one that came as a major surprise to water users. I've been following this river pretty closely for the past 7 years. And many of those 7 years have been, you know, there has been this question every time we get to this time of year when the call for the following year is being made. Many of those years, folks have been wondering, is this going to be the year? Is this going to be the year that we see a shortage declaration? But this is the first time that we're going to see a mandatory cut in deliveries.
And you alluded to a little of this, but, you know, what is happening here in terms of climate change? How much of what's happening in the basin stems from climate change?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, to be sure, the river is over-allocated. The 1922 compact that divvied up its flows, it overpromised. At the time, folks thought that there were about 16.5 million acre feet of water flowing down the river each year. And we now know that that estimate was off, you know, significantly. So there's simply not as much water as folks were promised a century ago. And there is less today because of climate change. So over the last two decades, basically since the year 2000, the river has been in what scientists call a mega drought. The flows have diminished about 20% during that period of time, which is a major challenge. And over the last 2 years have been really dry and really hot. And that's sort of what's pushed us finally to this point that we're in a shortage declaration. But the thing that really worries folks in the basin is the speed with which it's happened.
And for those not familiar, can you explain the significance of the Colorado River in the South? Southwest, you know, how many states rely on it and for what?
Yeah, so it's this workhorse waterway, 40 million people, a large percentage of the country's cattle ranches and agricultural output rely on the river's flows, as well as urban areas, Phoenix, Tucson, Las Vegas, Denver, you know, some of the big metropolitan areas that have been booming in recent years. The biggest question here is the future of the sort of rural West. Cities have hard needs for water, and they've got the money to pay for it. And the real question is what happens to agriculture, especially the sort of cattle ranches up in Colorado and Utah. You know, that's where those cities are going to be turning to for their water.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in your story, you described the basin as a climate change success story so far, which is something we don't hear often about climate change. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, the water managers and, you know, sort of state level officials within the seven states and Mexico have seen the writing on the wall. They know that the river is overallocated. They know, you know, whatever their ideological affiliation might be, they see the river drying out with their own eyes. And they've been very pragmatic about planning for it. You know, several decades ago, really, the approach to dealing with these challenges really shifted among the major water players from being one of sort of fighting and litigation to one of collaboration. And so for, you know, at least two decades, there's really been this pragmatic approach among water managers to figuring out, you know, how can we set about solving this problem and really sort of trying to understand what the others need. And it's been a notable thing. And it is, you know, the reason that it has taken so long to get to the point that we have this formal shortage declaration. So this is all really going to be coming to a head, you know, now. The fundamental rules governing sharing of the water along the river are due to expire in 2026. And so the parties are going to have to negotiate a new set of rules for how to operate the river going forward. And of course, that time period, you know, overlaps perfectly with the period in which the hydrology is going to be getting a lot worse. How much worse, we don't really know. And so, you know, these players are going to be sitting down to the table, you know, soon to figure out, you know, how are we going to share water on this river as it shrinks significantly? Do you plan for a river that's half the size that it is now, or, you know, two thirds of the size it is now? What is this sort of worst case scenario climate projections that you look at? And then the other big question hanging over it is this question of who bears the brunt of the cuts that come from climate change?
Also, yesterday, a group of oil trade associations sued the Interior Department over the delay in leases for oil drilling on public land. The lawsuit, filed by the American Petroleum Institute and a dozen smaller trade groups, says the Biden administration violated the Administrative Procedure Act by not holding lease sales for oil production on public lands. During the first month of the Biden administration, President Joe Biden ordered the pause on lease sales while the Interior Department evaluated ways to improve the leasing process. After the lawsuit, the Interior Department announced it would resume lease sales, even as it appeals the court's ruling. Earlier this year, attorneys general from Republican-led states filed a similar lawsuit in the same court that led to an injunction against the administration's pause on oil and gas leasing. The court is expected to rule soon on that lawsuit. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. If you want to support our show, the best way to do it is by leaving us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'm Kelsey Tamburino. Talk to you again tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Did you know that Chevron supports the ambitions of the Paris Agreement? In fact, they've even tied their executives' compensation to lowering the carbon emissions intensity of their operations. Because it's only human to help power a brighter future.